breakfast morning down on Parchment Farm. It's gonna be like this morning down on Parchment Farm. I would hate it so bad, but I left my wife and all.
Welcome to Joe Tripp and Friends. This is Joe Trippishan, and today we're speaking with composer and performer Frederick Reed. He'll share his memories of his close friend, Jeff Buckley. Hi, Fred. How's it going?
Good, good. How are you?
Good, good. The last two podcasts you spoke about your friendship with Jeff, his relationship to the music scene and your work. We spoke before about how when Jeff got back from his last musical tour, how you thought he changed. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's not the most pleasant thing, but I rarely saw him sober after he came back from the last European tour. And a lot of the musician friends that he knew on the music scene in New York had mentioned it as well. He just didn't seem the same. I noticed that a lot of times he'd come to Fez a day or two later after I'd seen him before, and he always hung out there. They used to feed him for free at Fez. He was always a welcome guest there at Fez Time Cafe. And even the waitresses, who all had huge crushes on Jeff, and the bartenders and stuff, they would say, oh my God, you know, what's wrong with him? He's wearing the same clothes he was wearing yesterday, you know, and he obviously hasn't showered or slept. And he'd be looking quite disheveled and tired and stuff. And yeah, a change had come over him. He wasn't the innocent, humble young lad that I used to know when the first few years that he started playing at Fez. He seemed a bit more serious, a bit more edgier than he normally used to be, not as goofy.
And this was 96, I guess?
Yes. End of 95 and in 96.
In 96, right, yeah. So what do you think caused this change?
I think touring was rough. Touring is rough on anyone, you know, those kind of tours. Touring might have been rough on his body, rough on his sleep, not sure exactly. Also, I know he was having problems getting material together for the next record. There were frustrations with the recordings that he had done with the guitarist from Television.
Tom Verlaine.
Yeah, I don't think that Jeff was happy with the recordings. I don't think the band was happy. I think Tom had been frustrated, and I know the record company wasn't happy with Tom as a producer. So the record company was starting to flex his muscles, you know, wanting him to get more material together. So there was a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah. It seems, though, that from the accounts that I read, that at one point he was actually ready to record that album, My Sweetheart the Drunk. He had gone down to Memphis, rented a house, and the day that he went missing in the Mississippi was the day that his band members had flown in to meet him and start recording. And from all accounts, his attitude and spirits were pretty high and positive. Did you get a chance to speak to him before he left?
Well, the last time I saw him was at Fez. I'm not sure what the date was, but I think he had been in Memphis. But I thought that, you know, him going to Memphis was a good idea because there wasn't as much temptation in Memphis, and there wasn't as many of the clingers-on, the hangers-on, as there are in New York.
Yeah.
There's an enormous amount of distractions and temptations in New York City, and there's always someone ready to party with you and keep you up all night, tell you you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, you know?
Right.
So I thought that going to Memphis was a good idea for him. Matter of fact, when I heard he was missing, I thought that maybe he might have, like, taken off to California to be with old friends or even taken off somewhere else just to kind of chill out from the pressure.
Just to disappear from all of that.
Yeah, for a while, and I was hoping that was the case. I remember because Chris Cunningham was playing that night at Fez with Susan McEwen when we first heard he was missing. Chris thought he was dead, that he had, and I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. I was saying, you know, maybe he just took off. Maybe he's trying to, like, hide out for a month or two. What do you think?
And was that opinion shared by other people?
It was mostly Chris and I. You know, we were all worried about him, but it was mostly Chris and I that were talking about it. Because Chris knew him really well. Chris used to jam with Jeff, and Chris played Fez a lot as well as Jeff, so we all knew each other pretty well. And I thought that maybe Jeff had taken off, because I wouldn't have put it past him. You know, Jeff did a lot of goofy stuff, and I thought he might be goofing on the world and had a friend as collusion, you know, a roadie as collusion, and I was hoping that, you know, he'd just taken off somewhere for a month or, you know, so to get his head together.
What do you think motivated him? What do you think was behind his musical genius?
Well, when I first met him, he was extremely motivated. I think he didn't state so directly, but just he was around, he was everywhere, he was playing all the time. You could just tell he was extremely motivated to make his mark in music. You know, I think he was extremely motivated to create his own sound. And certainly he did so vocally. And I think, you know, he wanted to create a new sound with the band.
Right.
He was a huge admirer of people who had their own sound or their own method, like Led Zeppelin, like Leonard Cohen, like Pink Floyd. You know, he was an extreme admirer, Joni Mitchell, people who had their own mark, their own way of doing things, and I think he wanted to do that with the band.
Right.
I think he wanted to take the band to the next level and wasn't sure how to do it. Yeah, he certainly was extremely motivated to make his own mark on music.
Other people talk about his problems with trying to get that second record together. I think during an Australian radio interview, Jeff even said that he didn't know how to write songs. And you mentioned before how he specifically chose his band members out of the vibe he felt with them. If they had the right vibe and they could jam together, that's what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want the traditional session musician, set me up, plug me in, give me the notes to play, and let me go type of thing.
Well, you know, had he lived, it would have been interesting to have seen him with some top-flight session musicians under a producer who knew how to work with them. It might have been something that would have been interesting to see, like a producer like Daniel Lanois and a bunch of the guys that might have played with Dylan or someone like that. I mean, I think that would have been great for Jeff. I know that he resisted that. He resisted the normal kinds of authority. Not outwardly. I think a lot of the resistance is more passive-aggressive. But that would have been a great thing for Jeff to do eventually. Like an album like Leonard Cohen did some very DIY kind of records and low-key records. But then Leonard's also done records that were extremely well-produced with extremely professional session musicians. I think that would have been great for Jeff. You know, had guitar players like Jimmy Page, you know, come in and play with him, you know. Seriously,
that would have been... Imagine that, Jimmy Page and Jeff together.
Yeah, maybe have Leonard Cohen write lyrics for some of his songs, or, you know, just had, like, Brian Eno or someone like that produce it, you know, like the kind of production that U2 might have gotten or whatever. Not for every album, I'm just saying for one record it would have been great. I would have liked to have seen Jeff get his butt back up to Woodstock, you know, and play with all the Woodstock players. I think Jeff did need direction, you know. He was kind of spinning his wheels after the tour. I don't know if he knew exactly what he wanted, because Tom Verlaine certainly is a very, very talented guy. I love the early work that Tom did with Television. I like his guitar playing. He played some guitar with David Bowie. He played guitar with Patti Smith. But once again, it's like, is he a good producer? I don't know. You know, it's like, to really produce a record, that's a whole separate set of skills as opposed to being a songwriter or a guitar player. Tom had been one of Jeff's heroes. I think Jeff admired Television and that DIY punk sort of thing on the New York scene. That's why he loved Patti Smith so much, and and hanging out with players like Lenny Kaye, right. You know, and Ivan Kral, those players that were in the New York punk scene. You know, Jeff admired that aesthetic. You know, it would have been great if instead of Tom Verlaine producing the record, if Jeff could have written some songs with Tom Verlaine. Who knows, you know? Who knows what Brian Eno or Daniel Lanois would have done with Jeff?
So do you think that what might have held Jeff back was his admiration for his heroes, like Tom Verlaine, and maybe his inability to fire Tom?
Maybe. Well, he wouldn't have needed to fire him, per se. I think he could have... You know what I mean? I think maybe he needs to work on the material a bit more and get settled. It would have been great if he'd had gotten in the room with the band and let the tape run and then had the band solid and then maybe supplemented the band with Gary Lucas again and maybe Tom Verlaine and maybe some of the other crowd, the Patti Smith crowd or whatever. You know, it would have been nice if he had maybe written some songs with Patti Smith, too. If he was having writer's block, which he talked about, well, then he should have collaborated like they do in Nashville, you know?
Yeah. Did he talk about writer's block to you?
No. He never really talked too much about writer's block or songwriting, which is a shame because... Well, I remember I tried to give Jeff some brotherly or fatherly advice, like before that first European tour. I remember I was talking to him and Mick again. You know, Mick was like a taller, kind of a tall guy, and I liked Mick. You know, I didn't get any attitude with Mick from Mick, which I liked. Mick just wanted to play, and so Mick always seemed like a really nice guy to me. I didn't know Mick Brundle very well, but I always got a good vibe from him. And, you know, we were talking in the dressing room, and I was, like, telling him and Jeff, Mick and Jeff, I was like, listen, you know, I know you're going to go out and you're going to party, you're going to have a good time, but be careful of the drugs. And Mick kind of laughed at me, and I said, yeah, well, Mick, I'm serious, you know, you got to be careful. That shit'll really screw you up, you know. I've had a lot of friends that got hurt really bad by drugs.
The one time I met him, the first and only time, he was totally sober. And uh-huh. He was just goofing around, having a great time, without any type of substances. Was that the last time you saw him sober?
Yeah, I'd say it was, actually.
Summer of 96.
The last time I saw him sober was when we did Ozark Melody. And then that was the last time I really kind of saw the old Jeff. The fooling around, goofy Jeff that was like, just wanted to have a good time and play music, you know? And I think that's why the Ozark Melody thing was so much fun for him. I mean, he could have come up for 15, 20 minutes, a half an hour, and just split, but he just spent the afternoon with us because he was having a good time. There wasn't any pressure on him, you know, we were just screwing around, you know.
I didn't even have a beer in the fridge.
No, we just got him some coffee, you know. Some coffee, some tea, some snacks, you know.
I know, that's the way I think we should all remember him.
Yeah, I mean, if he had been there longer, the beers might have come out later. I might have gone down to the deli and gotten a six-pack, but, you know. I don't think he had a problem with beer, though. I don't know. I'm trying to think when was the last time I spoke with him on the phone. Might have been before he came up... to do Ozark Melody. I do remember wanting to give him a call, though, later that year and just say, hey, how you doing? What are you doing? What are you up to? What are you working on? That kind of thing. You know, but then it's just one of those things you think, yeah, I should give this person a call, and then you don't, and then you find out they're gone, which was really disturbing to me. The same exact thing happened with Bob Quine, guitar player. He used to play with Richard Hell and the Voidoids. He played with Lou Reed. He played with Brian Eno and Ivan Julian, the guitar player, the other guitar player from Richard Hell and the Voidoids. I used to see him playing with people at Fez. I saw Ivan at Fez. I'm trying to remember who he's playing with. And Ivan, I asked him about Bob Quine, and Ivan said, well, you know, he's not doing so well. You should give him a call. And I put a note in my mind, yeah, I'll have to call Bob and say hello, because his wife had died. And then, boom, a week later, he committed suicide.
Sad thing. Well, we should just remember that when Jeff died, it was a swimming accident. There were no drugs found in this body. It was actually the beginning of what would have been a really different period of his life. You know, he was really looking forward to recording this new album, and he was in good spirits. And I think we should remember him as that fun-loving kid, musical genius.
Yeah, I still kick myself though for not calling him.
Yeah,
because I kick myself with Jeff for not doing a lot of things. You know, knowing him like I did and not. I don't know, but I certainly kick myself for not calling him, you know, because I had a gut instinct to call him that season, and I didn't, and then I had a gut instinct I should call Bob, and I just put it aside, procrastinated, and then Bob was gone. And that's the thing, life is precious, you know, we think, you know, these people that are really talented, like Jeff Buckley, you think these people are immortal in some ways, and certainly their work is immortal, but we don't realize how fragile, you know, people like Jimi Hendrix, Jeff Buckley, how fragile they really are, and how, you know, they're here today, gone tomorrow. I feel very privileged to have known Jeff and to have mixed all those shows of his at Fez, and to have done the song with him and you. I wish I had done more songs with him, and I wish that he hadn't left the planet so soon. I still think it's a crying shame. Jeff Buckley, in my opinion, was a great artist who put the music first and gave the music his all. I have so many vivid musical memories of his performances. Some of the sounds that he made were almost sacred. And then other memories I have are him goofing around and making everyone in the audience laugh and chuckle, and like they were in the living room with him, you know, at a party. He embodied so many aspects of music, and the memory of his music will never leave me. He was a great artist, and I feel very, very privileged to have known him and to have worked with him.
Well, let's keep the memory of him alive, at least. He certainly lives in his music. I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing your memories of Jeff Buckley. Thank you all for listening. This is Joe Chip and Friends with Frederick Reed. Rien que nous deux.